Radio Tonic, the podcast.
When I say the words East Germany and Olympics, certain images may come to mind. Gold medals, oversized shoulders, and needles full of steroids. To the outside world, it seemed there was nothing East Germany wouldn't do to ensure international sporting fame during the 1970s and early 80s. But did they really employ a musician to produce electronic music specifically designed to help athletes win gold? The question has been the topic of much internet debate since 2013, when a label from Glasgow started releasing music which it claimed was the secret cosmic music of the East German Olympic program. Jack Kerr became obsessed with hunting down the elusive cosmic musician behind the music and followed his tracks all the way to Berlin.
So I'm here in the Mauer Park in Berlin, and today it's full of people playing games and birds whistling in the trees. But 30 years ago, this is a place that the Berlin Wall used to run through. That's not why I'm here though. Well, not exactly. Now I'm looking for a local resident, and I'm told he's a keen runner, and excuse me while I catch my breath. I don't know what this guy looks like though, because a photo of him has never been published, and his name, it's just a pseudonym. But this mysterious guy may have been the secret to East Germany's Olympic success.
Goldmedaille für Heike Friedrich aus der DDR. Ein Zehntel an ihrem eigenen Weltrekord vorbei.
In the 70s and 80s, the East German Olympians were a phenomenon. They won more gold than the US at a couple of games, and they're still in the top 10 medal winners of all time. Not bad for a country that only took part in five games. Of course, their doping regime was legendary. It'd probably make even Lance Armstrong blush. But drugs wasn't all the athletes were given. In the past few years, one of their more unusual training methods has come to light. It involved a series of musical cassettes, and on these cassettes was an experimental and repetitive type of music that was being developed in West Germany at the time. It's a style known as Kosmische Musik, or what we in the English-speaking world call Krautrock. There was no craft work on these tapes, no can, no Neu, none of the usual Krautrock suspects. There were no bands on there at all. No, the music on these cassettes was all the work of one man, the mysterious Martin Zeichneder. And as the story goes, these tunes were specifically written to help in top-level athletic training. Martin's involvement with the East German authorities has made him a bit of a recluse. More on that later. But here's what we do know. He was a sound editor from Dresden. He used to spend a lot of time in his attic, scanning the airwaves, trying to pick up radio signals from the West.
There was a station I could get from Düsseldorf that played kosmische Musik, you know, Kraftwerk and Cluster and Neu and so on. To me, sitting in the attic, turning the radio dial, searching for anything, hearing these beautiful new electronic sounds, it did seem like music from the cosmos. I would record it and pass tapes on to my friends. We did have people in the East doing electronic music, but I found their version of it all too studious. The music from the West was fun. It had energy.
There's very little out there about Martin Zeichneder. Apparently, he's only ever done one interview. The transcript of that conversation was published a few years ago. It's an amazing story.
I was a keen amateur runner, and when out I would play these motoric, repetitive songs in my head, I thought somehow it could be used as a training aid for athletes. The electric pulse sort of thing. I thought it could benefit the athlete's mind as well as body. The music would be hypnotic, it would bring focus. I shared my ideas with colleagues at work, but as was often the case in those times, I perhaps spoke in front of the wrong person. One day at the studio, two party members arrived and took me away in an official car. We drove in silence to the outskirts of Berlin, to what I later found out was an athletics camp. They knew all about me and my idea. I feared I would lose my job at the very least. It would be very bad for someone who worked on party films to be seen to be influenced by the enemy, you know, Western culture. They questioned me for hours, then left me alone in the room. Later, an official from the National Olympic Committee came in and told me I would begin to work on the project immediately.
I don't know how many people know Martin Zeichner's true identity, but there's at least one. His name is Drew. Drew McFadden. He's a synth nerd from Glasgow. And he met Mr. Zeichner while on tour in Berlin.
He said he would send me some music, and I got home from tour about a month later, and there was a package, and it was, cassettes, kind of colour-coded, and they didn't have song titles as such, they just had the kind of speed of the runs and, the length of the tracks. Very practical, very German.
But not as effective as other methods the Olympic program used.
He said a lot of the athletes were just, what is this? This is insane. When they would go to international meets, the East German athletes, they would try and swap their Kosmische Läufer cassettes for, Western pop music, Elton John or ABBA or whatever. Most of them didn't see it as a useful training technique.
The athletes may not have enjoyed it, but Drew was enthralled. He started a label and began releasing the recordings. He called the series Kosmischer Läufer. That's German for cosmic runner. And its cover was a tribute to the old East German flag, with its hammer and its compass. Well, of course, I had to try and meet this enigmatic Mr. Zeichner, no matter how reluctant he was. But where and how and more to the point, could a story this fantastic even be real?
Hello.
Hello.
Few know the secrets of the East German Olympic program as intimately as Ines Geipel. She was a star of the track and field until she was caught trying to flee the country. These days, she's an anti-doping campaigner.
Alle, die mit der Chemie zu tun haben, mit diesen männlichen Sexualhormonen, das war das klassische Mittel in der Zeit.
She's telling me here about the hormones that athletes were given and how touring athletes who try to escape might be sent home in wooden cages. And so what about these cassettes of cosmic running music?
Ich habe ja nun wirklich schon viele Geschichten über den DDR-Sport gehört.
I have indeed heard many stories about sport in the East, but this one actually never. So perhaps there was a coach who gave out cassettes like these, but we didn't have Walkmans in the 70s, so I don't really see how this could work.
Wie das funktioniert haben soll, ich kenne es nicht.
Well, this is problematic. So have I been an idiot to believe a tape could inspire an athlete to greatness? Not necessarily.
Ja, also ich war Anfang der 80er Jahre in Köln zu einem Wettkampf.
So yes, at the beginning of the 80s, I was in Cologne for this athletics competition and Carl Lewis came up to me. He was in such good form that day. He had a Walkman and he put the headphones on me and the cassette was saying,
Carl Lewis, you are the greatest. Carl Lewis, you are going to win.
And yes, of course, absolutely, he has won. This motivation tape also had the noise of a stadium with all the highs like clapping and cheering for him. But if there was anything like that in the East, I don't know.
Ich kenne es einfach von der DDR nicht.
A motivational voice is one thing, but what about motivational music? I've done a few of those Jane Fonda workouts. I know how songs can really get you pumped up. But could music be such a strong psychological motivator that it might help a nation to win gold?
You know, muscles don't work as well when they're dehydrated.
I've headed to Leipzig to find out. So I'm just coming to meet Dr. Tom Fritz, who works at the Max Planck Institute and is an expert in music, sport and psychology and how they all interconnect. And look, I've just walked into this room and it's full of gym equipment that has all wires running off it, and it's going into a mixing desk that music would normally come out of. Good afternoon, Tom.
Hello, it's a pleasure to meet you, Jack.
What is going on in this room?
Well, this is a place where people can achieve musical euphoria in possibly the most systematic and effective way.
So it turns out the gym equipment has been turned into controllers for making techno music. And this combination of pumping iron and making music has psychological effects that are strong enough to reform drug addicts. But I wonder if this kind of high could have an effect on the world's best athletes. Does music have the ability to make somebody number one?
Oh, yes, it does. And that's actually the reason why using music in professional sports tournaments has been banned. And there have been world records achieved under music listening before that was the case.
What his research on all these machines is showing him is this. When an athlete trains with music, the work is far less exhausting and the effects are long-lasting.
I mean, if you've trained with a certain music, and music is memorized very well, and it is naturally then associated with this type of sports behavior, and it will trigger those associations when you then perform the sport, so, oh yes, it will have a very strong impact. Like if you run and you have a tune in your head and, you know, you synchronize to the tune in your head.
So maybe Martin's story could be real after all.
We know now that the athletic directors were trying anything to gain an advantage in those times. At least my idea did not harm the athletes.
If the East Germans weren't employing musical athletic training, it sounds like they should have been.
The first things I tried were basically electronic metronomes at various paces with very little melody. These were tested, but the athletes didn't respond very well, so I began writing more musical pieces. Sometimes I would be joined by a drummer and the guitarist. We would be in the live room doing 20-minute space rock pieces while a government official sat bored on the other side of the glass. It was surreal.
But East Germany and cosmic music, these aren't two terms that I would ever put together. At the local record store, though, I discover some surprises, like this one from the mid-1980s. It sounds as good as any cosmic disco I've heard from the West. And unlike the Kosmische Läufer recordings, there's nothing secretive about it at all. And there never was. It's from an album on East Germany's only pop label. The artist is Julius Krebs. And he still lives in the same Berlin flat he did all those years ago. Julius?
Hi, Jack. Nice to meet you.
You too.
Come in, Jack. So, this is my musician flat, as you can see. A little bit messy.
How much influence was there from the government, from the Stasi, from whoever, on the kind of music that you made?
especially in electronic music. In the GDR, there was no restrictions because no lyrics means no problems with the government. So it was easy and we could play what we wanted and there were no limitations. The limit was our brain, if you like.
Imagination,
yes, yes. In other music, of course, especially the lyrics, this was terrible. Every word was checked if it's good for the masses or not. And of course, they tried to use them for their way. This is normally. But in the electronic music, it's not possible.
So they really encouraged electronic music?
Yes, yes. And they supported it as well.
The government may have supported electronic music, but Julius still had to buy his synthesizers on the black market. There were diplomats who'd smuggle them in for him, and the collection that he built up became something of an open secret. In fact, there were musicians like Julius all over the Eastern Bloc. The Latvian group Zodiac had a hit with this album in 1980. And here's some Russian disco from the same period.
Влево, вправо, влево, вправо, влево, вправо, влево, вправо.
Anyway, these were all mainstream records. But there were even punks behind the wall. And they used to put on these avant-garde fashion shows where models would strut their stuff up and down these underground runways in clothes made out of things like industrial farming materials. And that's not all. You see, I'd always heard it was forbidden to listen to Western radio and to watch Western TV in the East. Turns out, not the case.
I would say normal people in the GDR, which were able to watching West TV and broadcast, did it. We only did watch East TV when our own music was playing there. We did not watch it.
Knight Rider, a shadowy flight into the dangerous world of a man who does not exist.
I would be summoned to Berlin generally in the winter to produce tracks for the upcoming athletic season.
I don't know what to believe anymore.
The last work I did was in 1983, doing pieces for the gymnastic team's floor performances.
Music can trick your body.
The project stopped as suddenly as it had started. I was given no explanation.
East Germany wasn't all bad.
I think it may have been due to the boycott of the Los Angeles Olympics.
And one of my favourite albums may be far too good to be true.
It looks like a sort of a piece of a jigsaw puzzle that should be there rather than it being the truth, if you know what I mean.
This is Richard Foster, who runs a magazine called Incendiary. He's firmly of the belief that Kosmischer Läufer isn't all that it claims to be. It sounds too clean and too modern for a start. And the liner notes don't completely check out. I mean, the Walkman wasn't even released until this project was almost over. And then there's Mr. Zeichner's pseudonym. That's an odd one. It translates as Mr. Sketched or Mr. Drew. Hang on, like Drew McFadden? But why would someone go to all this trouble of making up a story so elaborate?
The simplest answer is a need to continue to find lost music of an era that people still remember and sort of have a strange nostalgia for. And I think the Kosmischer Läufer albums were just reflecting that interest.
It wouldn't be the first time someone has faked an album's backstory. There are records where women are masquerading as men and models masquerading as singers. Nobodies pretending to be somebodies, pretending to be nobodies. And there's a number of German electronic pioneers whose genius somehow managed to slip through the cracks. But surely Martin's story has got to be real. What do you think, Julius?
I do not think so. In fact, there was good musicians and composer, but never heard about this guy. I know everybody from the scene. It was just 4 or 5 people, not more. So I know them all, yes.
Do you think one of them could have been making it without telling you?
Of course, everybody is possible. But I never heard about it. I never heard. That's interesting.
Would it be... It could be something that they wanted to keep a secret.
I don't think so. The composer would be proud to support the sport guys. I didn't heard about it, but I don't think so that somebody would not tell it.
Oh, this is heartbreaking. I feel cheated. Actually, I feel totally ripped off. But then I meet a Berliner who is something of an expert on anonymity in pop music. Her name is Kiwi Menrath. And no, that's not the name she was born with. She says music has always been about creating identities and personas. And in her eyes, it's important that we separate a lie from someone just playing with reality, or what she calls collaborative imagination.
They give away hints, they give away certain points, and they create doubt from the beginning. And so the interesting thing about this project is that the audience is invited to collaborate in the project because they can, with their imagination, they can contribute to the piece. So from the beginning, it's very unclear whether this is really true or not. Yeah, I mean, I think that truth is nothing that counts for everyone the same. So there are various truths for various places and people in the world, and so that doesn't have to lead to relativism, but it's known to us that we create truth.
I go home and I start going through all my records and scour their covers, looking for clues to their authenticity. And then I notice the strangest thing. It's a track of obscure Nigerian funk from a short-lived group called the Daktaris. The title of the track is Altsug Ilbal Lesiti. And I'd always assumed it was a phrase from some African language. And then I get it. It's a punchline, which has been waiting to be discovered. Because spelled backwards, Altsug Ilbal Lesiti says, it's all a big hustle. Hustle, 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 hustle. And that's when it finally sinks in. Words can deceive, so it's only music you can believe, even if it's been faked.
So many different ways of wondering whether it's a hoax, because the hoax is played on a receiver, and if the receiver doesn't really care, does it really matter that it's a hoax? I always think that it really doesn't, because the quality of the music overrides all other considerations.
I made this music for people to train to. Because of the time and place I did it, only a select few got to use it. I would like for more people to finally use and enjoy it. It is as simple as that.
As far as Martin's concerned, it's great for him because he's very happy to stay in the shadows. He's happy with being left alone, and I don't mind either. So yeah. We're both happy with that, as long as people enjoy the music.
The Mysterious Tracks of a Cosmic Runner was written and produced by Jack Kerr. Julie Shapiro was the supervising producer, and the sound engineer was John Jacobs. If you're interested in getting your hands on some of Martin Zeichnetter's krautrock, the third release of Kosmischer Lofer, or Cosmic Runner, is due out soon. Head to our website for a link. This is the Radiotonic Podcast.
Radiotonic, the podcast.